I love speaking to a group like this because I see faces out there that sort of grew up around my generation and Larry's. And so y'all know probably some of the people I'm going to refer to. Anybody ever remember Jim Croce? I know you all were too spiritual for that. I was a child of the 60s, rock and roll. So. Jim Croce had a great song. It was Don't Mess Around With Jim. And the great chorus from that that everybody remembers is, you don't step on Superman's cape, you don't spit into the wind, you don't pull the mask off the old Lone Ranger, and you don't ever speak after Larry Eirig. When I got the agenda, I was desperately trying to get Brent to come up and speak next, because all of us are going to look poor compared to that. Another thing from the 60s I don't think you all understood, the Dead Sea Scrolls, they actually found something that you may not have heard about in there. It was a gospel that was a co-working of Paul and John. And I bet you haven't read that gospel yet. So we're going to go to verse 1, chapter 1. And it starts with, nothing you can make that can't be made, no one you can save that can't be saved, nothing you can do, but you can learn to be you in time. It's easy. All you need is love. Obviously, John Lennon and Paul McCartney. For those of you who are searching your Bibles going, I don't know where that is. The reason I start with that is because that's what the international side of grace is all about. Our missionaries who are out there expressing the incredible love they have for the people. George and Leela, here, comfortable, having good jobs, going to India with nothing, on a vision from God, and they find it, and they use the love they have to minister to others. And that's all I want to talk to you about today. You're probably asking, who is he? Why the heck is he up here? And I ask myself the same question every day. 10 years ago, my plan was to retire from the business world and play golf 7 days a week. And I think I've played golf maybe 3 times in the last 2 years. God's ways are certainly higher than our ways, aren't they? But you know why I'm here, because you answered the same question I did. In Isaiah 6, where God says, who will go for me? Yes. You said yes. And I remember the moment in church when the pastor was preaching that, and I, as loud as I could inside my head, said, yes, I will go for you. Since that point, not having any idea what that would mean, and from that point on, he's taken control of my life, and I've been blessed in so many ways. Sydney and I talk every day about how in the world are we so blessed that at this stage of our lives, we get to travel the world. We get to hang out with some of the greatest spiritual people that God ever created. We get to take people over there. We get to minister to them. We get to come in front of groups like you and beg for money for those people. Don't worry. It'll be painless. Don't worry. But it's really just incredible to us. And I'm just one of God's jokes, okay? I grew up when I was 8 years old. I said to my father, I want to go to West Point. He was military. My grandfather was military. I ended up getting a nomination to the military academy, as I tell Stu all the time. And it's really funny because I grew up deciding I wanted to kill people for a living. And now God's got me wanting to save people for a living. He has the most amazing sense of humor, doesn't he? Well, I did that, and then I went into the business world and was 40 years a businessman, flying all over the country. Luckily, I was able to come up here to Portland occasionally and just admire the beautiful. Oh, Houston is like a pancake, and you guys have the most incredible mountains and terrain and trees. You probably don't realize how good it is because you live here and you're just used to it every day. But we get to come in, and Sydney was just like a kid in a candy store as we were driving around. Look at that mountain. Look at that snow. Look at these trees. It was awesome. But from that point of time where I said that, a series of 20 different, and I'm not going to bore you with it today, but there are 20 different instances that happened. Some of them were one-minute conversations. Some of them were a chance meeting that led me from living on the west side of Houston, 45 miles from Grace Church, ending up at Grace Church, volunteering, then being asked to go to India to escort Pastor Garrett, who I didn't know and who didn't know me, and yet he asked me to go with him. Don't ask me why, you'll have to ask him. And in that moment, God spoke to me and said, this is what you'll do the rest of your life. And I had no idea what that meant. I said, am I supposed to stay here? Am I supposed to go? And then he, as he often does, he just went quiet. So I came back, went to seminary, continued working, finally retired, and Garrett said, come on board and invent a mission program for our church. So we did that. We got that started, and then Steve called up and said, would you join the IMB? Great, I'd be glad to do that. And I got to meet the wonderful people in this room as a board members and district supervisors and IMB members. And then last year, Steve says, George is retiring. Would you like to take that position? I go, why me? I'm the last guy on the board. And he said, nobody else wants it. He didn't say that, but I'm pretty sure that's exactly the reason. I take no pride in this because everybody else works for a living, and I do missions normally, so it's logical that I might do this. So again, I have three purposes in the position I hold right now. One is to interact with our international missionaries around the world, help them with their problems, let Stu and Steve know if there are any issues they need to deal with. Secondly, is to come and talk to groups like you. And this is the fifth district meeting I've been at so far, and I got to say, you guys have it nailed. Yeah. Nobody else is anywhere close to this. Please don't tell them I said that, but I'll come back every year if you guys have me. This is awesome. We need to communicate this to the rest of GI to do this, because what a wonderful time of fellowship. And then the third part is we lead mission teams around the world, and we coordinate with Caleb and Alyssa Mooney about their Hoovenet mission trips down to Central America, and Barry and Jeff Seif on their trips to Israel. So, if anybody, 1 minute commercial, if anybody wants to go on a mission trip, please see one of us. And I'm going to talk a little bit later about why. You might ask why I'm so passionate about this, and I hope that shows through, because I am. This is the love of my life. That's God's gift to me back there, is love of my life. But I have love for God, love for Sydney, and then love for this blessing that we've been able to do. You might ask why. And it comes back to a time on our very first mission trip. We were driving up to a town called Nagendra Naga in India, and we took a team of doctors and nurses over there to give a medical camp to the five different campuses that George had. We're driving up the hill, and I'm on the bus, and I look over here to the left, and there's about a 1,000-foot drop off there. We're going really up there. It's India. There are no side guards or anything like that, but we're okay. And on the house, I see these little huts, and they're not even huts. They're poles with a tarp over them. And that's where these families have to live. And a little child walks out completely naked, and a parent comes out just in sort of the barest diaper or rags they could have. They look like they hadn't eaten in months. And I looked down at them, and God spoke to me in that moment. And he said, Larry talked last night about sovereignty. We all understand that concept of sovereignty, right? God does or allows everything that happens in this world. And when I looked down there, he said, why did I put you where you are and them where they are? Why weren't you born there and they born in your seat? And you know, when I got that, it was scary. Because I understand the sovereignty of God. I could have been born in India in the deepest poverty. I could have been born in Africa with nothing. Yet he put me here in America, gave me the opportunity to go to the best military academy, a good school. And he gave me the ability now to interact and help. But when you really get that and you understand, you have an obligation. He put them there so you could interact into that environment, so you could do something about those people, so you can take what God gave you here and use that to help those around the world. You're so blessed to be in an organization like Grace International with 3,800 churches, 3,700 churches, most of which, almost all, are around the world. People of great integrity, people that are just wonderful, and you have a chance to participate in that and be involved. Acts 1:8 says, you all know it, you can probably quote it without even looking at it, you'll receive power when the Holy Spirit comes upon you, and you will be my witnesses to Jerusalem, Judea, Samaria, and the ends of the earth. Now, most of us are really good in Jerusalem. Your church is Jerusalem. Most of us really good. We have outreach programs. We have things. We go visit the hospitals. We do all those things in that 10-mile circumference around our church. Organizations that aren't like ours struggle sometimes to find the Judea, Samaria, and ends of the earth part of that command. That's the only command Jesus had after his resurrection. The only one. Repeated 5 times in Scripture. When the gospel writers, the Holy Spirit through the gospel writers, says anything twice, that's important. When he said 5 times, you know that's something we need to pay attention to. And that's what you're so blessed, and I'm so blessed to be part of GI, where we have those people. We can help that. We can participate in Judea, Samaria very easily. And so I'm going around to talk all the districts about this, but this is sort of like coming and singing to the choir. At convention, Steve stood up and he said, we would like 100% of the churches to give. And thanks to great leadership from Craig and Ed, 100% of your districts have given over the past year. So can I say thank you for that? I also, I'm not going to name names, but 3 of your churches are in the top 10 in total giving for missions out of all the churches who give, and those 3 are probably in the top 4 when it comes to per member of congregation dollars to missionaries. Thank you guys so much. You guys have a heart for missions that just flows through. And so I should just say thank you for Steve, for Stu, for Larry, from all of us. And then I should sit down. But that would do a disservice to what I've been asked to do, because I come out of the business world, and last year is last year, and next year is what we're going for, and nobody lowers the bar for next year. So let me tell you, as an organization, Grace International increased last year over the year before by $190,000 in giving. That's amazing. That is a huge percentage. And when I looked at that, when Debbie sent me the numbers, I looked at that and I went, you know what? We're so close to $1 million in total giving for an organization that if everybody stepped up and did 10% more than they did this last year, we will be able to say we're giving $1 million to our missionaries around the world. So some of you right now are looking at me going like, the man's crazy. Does he not understand how hard this is? Yes, I do. Does he not understand that we've got so many bills? Yes, I do. Doesn't he understand coronavirus might hurt our attendance and our tithes are going to go down? Yes, I know all that. So why in the world would I be asking you for anything more? Well, it takes me back to my West Point days. And after the first year, plebe summer, we go out into the woods and we learn how to be soldiers. And one night we went on an all-night hike up and down the mountains, and it happened to be raining cats and dogs, total cloud cover, so there was no moon at all, so you couldn't see anything. We're going through the forest. We're falling down. We're falling into ditches. We are tired, hot, and miserable. At the end of the night, we come to an opening. The light's coming up, and we see all the way across there breakfast, and it's all worth it. Okay, hot coffee. Bacon, eggs, more bacon. And we're going, this is great. Okay, we're going to, you know, as rough night as that was, carrying a 50-pound pack and a rifle and a helmet, we're finally going to get some food. So we start heading over there, and the instructor says, not so fast. He says, before you go, you're going to have to jump over this ditch, and then you can go get some breakfast. Well, the ditch was probably, I'd say from probably right about here to maybe right about here. And, you know, normally, we're in really good shape. So if we had tennis shoes on and shorts, gym shorts, and weren't carrying a 50-pound pack, we could have made that, no problem. But we're looking at that guy, it's not happening. And there was water in the ditch on top of that. But he says, you got to do it. So, okay, we're going to do it. So we all get back in line looking at each other. Okay, maybe we'll make it. So we come up here, take off, just jump as hard as we can, and splash right in the middle of the ditch. Now we're covered with mud. So we crawl out and we start heading over breakfast. He says, no, come back. You have to jump over. So we walk back and we're going, we can't do this. He says, you want breakfast? You got to do it. So now we're really mad. So that adds to our fuel. So we get way back here and we're going to do it this time. So we're patting each other. Like, come on, we got this. Take off. And just, it was like grease lightning. You know, we're just flying. We're just take off and splash, right in the middle of the thing. And now we're mad. We're just yelling at each other. We can't do this. We can't do this. And we turn to the instructor. What do you think? So he just smiles at us. And he walks over and he picks up a box. And he takes the box over to the ditch and he turns it upside down. And about 30 snakes fall out into the water. Every one of us jumped over the ditch. And, you know, and it took years for me to understand that. But you know what? The instructor knew more than we did what we had inside of us. He knew to get in there that we had certain abilities we didn't even know we had. God knows what he put inside of each of you. And he knows that no matter how hard it is, he also put Acts 1:8 into you, and he put in this desire to help those around the world, and he knows, he wouldn't have me, think of sovereignty of God, he wouldn't have me here talking about this if it was going to be impossible for you to do what I'm asking you to do today. So we know it's possible. It's just a matter of, are you willing to do it? William Carey had this statement about missions, because there's some art. When we started this program, over the years, we've noticed something about the DNA of our church, the missions program. William Carey said, when missions shapes the mission of the church, the significance of what we are called to do transforms what could be routine and mundane into what should be profound and meaningful. Lighting the fire of missions under a congregation sets them in motion and ignites their passion in a way that's hard to extinguish once it gets started. Willow Creek did a survey. They felt like their church was unengaged, was not on fire. And Bill Hybels was saying, got to find out why. He commissioned a survey of 1,500 churches. And what he found is the average church has four boxes of four types of groups of people. The first one are the unbelievers who come into your church either the first time or they're just coming in, they haven't declared for the Lord. The second group is the new believers who have said, I want Jesus to be Lord of my life, and they're sort of learning who is Jesus and what's this all about. The third group are your more mature Christians. They are the ones who are your volunteers and your leaders in your church. They're the key group that you depend on. The fourth group, though, the ones that are most on fire, the highest tithing percentage, that group is the group that does all the rest of it but two more things, missions and Bible study. And that's what you want to move your DNA of your church to. We just did a survey of the people who have gone on mission trips for last year at our church. And what I found out was 60% of those people who went on missions are tithers today. 67%. Anybody in here like to have 67% pure tithers in your church? Yeah. And there is a chicken or the egg thing. I understand that. But just the 62% of those people are volunteers in our church. Getting people to go changes the DNA of your church and engages people in a way that you've never. But you don't have to go. I heard somebody yesterday telling me that what they were challenging their congregation to do is pick one of the 26 endorsed missionaries and support that person over the next year. Doesn't matter how much. Just pick one, support them. $5, $10, $25 a month, whatever it is, and do that on a regular basis. That's a wonderful idea. If everybody did that, we'd hit $2 million. We wouldn't hit $1 million. But that's just one hint that we got from somebody whose heart is here. Those three churches I talked about who are exceeding the norm by far out of these two districts, the heart of those pastors are so on fire for missions that it conveys to the congregation and lets them know this is something that's not just nice to do. You can't live without this. This is like oxygen. This is how we breathe. Let me tell you a little bit about just a couple of people. You're right. You can't see the clock back there, so I guess I could just keep going as long. Don't worry, Brent. I'm going to leave you some time. Paul Adams. I've sat in a room in South Africa and watched him teach, and I've seen the eyes of the pastor so locked on and taking notes furiously that I know lives are being hugely impacted by what he does all around the world. Thomas Okuute has probably been in some of your churches. We were there and we helped build the foundation for one of the new buildings at his school that he has outside of Warri in Nigeria. He takes 120 young people, 18 to 28 years old, who have no skills. He gives them a free two-year education and teaches them to be either seamstresses or shoemakers. He's now going into welding and a few other areas. He does that for free for those guys for 2 years. We took a team there and we helped build a foundation for a new building. It was actually, side note, that was one of the funniest moments of my life is we're sitting there and we're carrying these bricks and Thomas is sitting there watching us and he's on the phone with another pastor nearby and he says, yeah, we got these 10 white guys out here working and you don't believe that. Come by. Literally, people came by and took pictures of us. They couldn't believe that Americans would come over there and do heavy labor to help them in their ministry. Your dollars are also doing that as well. Moses Akuma, one of my favorite people on the earth, one of the most humble men you'll ever meet, sold his inheritance to get enough money to buy land for a school, built a school, now has 700 kids in that school, 350 orphans. And there are people in this room who have given money to help build the orphanage that he just opened, and we just went out there to see the last part of it. Our church contributed. I know you guys did too. He now has 350 orphans who have three meals a day, who have a house mother or house father, who have a safe place to live in that environment. I went to visit Slavik Kravchuk in the Ukraine. And those of you my age will understand this when I say, I had never met anyone who had actually been in a Soviet concentration camp and lived. He was sent there for 2 years because he refused to renounce Jesus when he was 18 years old. They put a gun to his head 5 times and said, we're going to shoot you if you don't renounce. He refused to renounce. Sent him there for 2 years. Most of the people died from that environment. It's in Siberia. I mean, talk about cold. But he, after 2 years, they gave up and they let him come out. He's built 60 churches, has 2 homes for men with addictions, hosts summer camps for orphans and needy kids all summer long. Fabiana Mansowicz, we went down to Argentina. She has feeding kitchens. She has 3 or 4 feeding kitchens now that the poorest of the poor, the people who get no food at all, those kids can come on a daily basis and at least get 1 hot meal a day. Your dollars given to them. Juan Carlos, you know, spent 12 weeks last year in China teaching pastors and, by the way, priests and nuns about the Holy Spirit. It's an amazing thing that he has going on there. Obviously, probably on hold right now for a reason you all know well. But the work he's doing over there is life-changing. But dollars just don't tell the story. I walked into Moses' house. His house was about as big as from here to here. That was his living room. He had one bedroom over there, another bedroom out here. His kitchen was out in the outside. And I thought about my house. I was so convicted. I almost started to cry. Here's a man that we're sending money to help, and he spends none of it on himself, and every penny of it goes to the children. That's what we want to do. That's why we support these people. Your international people are the both ministers and missionaries are the most, they have the highest level of integrity you would ever imagine. Every dollar you go means something to somebody around the world in a life-saving way. So I'm a resource for that, okay? One, we'd love to take y'all, every one of you in here on a mission trip, or anybody in your church. We've had people from California go. I've had people from Wisconsin go. I'd love to see more of that happening so that we can start having somebody come back to your church and say, hey, let me tell you about what we saw. Let me tell you about Thomas and what's going on in Nigeria. So I'd like to do that, but I also just want to act as a resource. If you need any information, if you want to have one of these guys come visit you, I know Larry does a lot of coordination for a lot of the missionaries on the West Coast here. If there's anybody else you need, we'll do our best to get them into your church. Because having one of those guys come in and talk, you don't need to do any more than that. I mean, they're going to tell their story, and heart's going to be broken, and people are going to open their pockets. And we do agree there's a second pocket, right? I'm not asking you to take one penny out of your tithe, because the tithe is for the running of the church. I know that. But the other pocket, we know there are multiple pockets, but for missions, there is that second pocket. Your people are giving. Christmas time comes. They see the TV ads, $19 a month for a child in Africa. People pay that. The Salvation Army, the Red Cross, Samaritan's Purse, everybody is out there. Your congregation is participating in outreach, whether they're doing it through you or through the TV set. You have to decide if you want to make an effort to draw them away from the TV back into Grace International to support one of our 26 endorsed missionaries. I'd like you to consider doing that. So if you have questions, Sydney and I are... I bring Sydney because everybody tolerates me and loves her. And so she's easy to talk to. I'd love to talk to you too. Anything you want to know about the mission program or the other, please ask us. At the end, I started with the Beatles and All You Need Is Love, because that really is what this is about. And I want to end with a video that we put together. Almost all the children you see in this are from our mission trips. And honestly, to be very transparent, I can't watch this without crying, because this is real to me. This is what we see every time we go. That last scene where David Scarpetta and I were hugging on that boy, that was down in Colombia. It was part of an indigenous tribe that isn't subject to any laws that the Colombian country is under. And the night before, that boy had been beaten with a rubber hose. Every part of his body under his clothes was black and blue. And that's what we do. And these kids need that love. So I just thank you for what you've done this past year. You guys have been awesome. Like I said, Craig, Ed, you guys just done a wonderful job. And every pastor here has stepped forward and been faithful. So thank you for doing that, and thank you for anything you do in the future. It's been a pleasure to be here and speak to you today. Thank you. Sydney is yelling at me as usual. She keeps me in line. We have a packet which has all the mission and international ministry and missionaries information. We also have a flash drive with this video on it. If you want to share it in your church, as you talk about missions, feel free. We also have a couple other videos as well. And one just as an example of what we do at Grace at the end of the year to show our congregations what we do as we ask them to continue to do that. It's sort of a recap, give you an idea of just what we're doing there. Again, thank you. If for the flash drive, just come see us, or we'll give them to Ed and Craig. Thank you.